This podcast is brought to you by ORC HSE Strategies, an industry leader in developing innovative, sustainable approaches for protecting workers and the environment. ORC HSE is known as an honest broker and a source of responsible business positions on EH&S legal and regulatory issues. Now, what ORC HSE does is they maintain a constructive working relationship with policymakers in industry, labor, government, and key professional associations. And they keep all members abreast of important legal developments and help them navigate the thorny technical, legal, and regulatory issues that are our lives in EH&S. If you're interested in learning more about the unique opportunities available through ORC HSE, please contact our friend Linda Haney at 202-510-0509. Or, if you'd rather, drop her an email at linda.haney@orchse.com. That's Linda, L-I-N-D-A, dot Haney, H-A-N-E-Y, at orchse.com. Now, let's go on to the podcast.
Shanimus Maximus, that's your Roman gladiator name.
Wow, I didn't know that. I should have looked that up.
You know what your stripper name is, right? Take the first... Take the name of the first dog you had as a child and use that as your first name, and then take the street you grew up on as your last name. So what's your stripper name?
It would be Lassie Telford.
See, that's perfect. That is the perfect stripper name if I've ever heard one.
Lassie Telford.
Lassie Telford. Hi, everybody. It's Todd Conklin. This is the Pre-Accident Podcast. Thank you for listening. Holy guacamole. Here we are in 2017. Did you believe this would happen? Are you amazed? Recovering from the great holiday break for most of us in the world. I don't know. We get to start a whole new year, which for me is kind of exciting. I mean, because this is a year where I'm really going to celebrate the goodness in everybody. That is my theme for this year, and I'm going to really work this baby as hard as I can work it. It's been incredible. In fact, super incredible. Right now, I'm busily putting the final parts together for a book I finished up, or I'm actually currently finishing up, on fatalities and serious incidents. We'll talk much more about this because there's lots more to talk about. I have so much to tell you about this topic. I think we look at these so wrong. I think we've traditionally looked at these so wrong for a really, really long time. And it worries me because the wrongness we're using to look at fatalities and serious incidents, I think, is actually allowing serious incidents to happen. And that switcheroony, if you will, is going to be pretty controversial, but it's something we ought to be thinking about. It's a tough thing to get access to look at lots of these. Unfortunately for me, actually maybe fortunately for me, but unfortunately for the rest of the world, I've had a lot of access recently to a lot of these and got to look at them. That's neither here nor there. Things are good here. I'm really excited about 2017. I don't know why I'm excited. I guess it'd be easy to not be excited, but I think the opportunity to do the work we're doing is getting more accepted. What's the word I want? Accepted sounds wrong. It's mainstreaming a little bit more. These ideas were once, for many of us, these were pretty controversial, and we'd have big discussions about, well, you know, this is a get-out-of-jail-free card for our workers, or I got to be able to hold workers accountable. Now we're really starting to get pretty good at looking beyond sort of the sizzle, looking beyond the human error, looking beyond where the worker screwed up, to a much more complete, much more context-rich understanding of how things happen. Gosh, what else could we ask for? I mean, I don't know what else. I guess unlimited M&Ms always comes to mind, but I'm not sure that would be good either. That's part two of the 2017 push that I'm on right now. Today's podcast is pretty cool. We're going to talk to Shane Bush. And Shane's, it's no secret, Shane and I have been friends for a long, long, long time, and we taught together for a long, long time. Hopefully we're going to get to do it again this year. We've got a couple things, we're scheming up some things where we can go out and do some work together, which would be really fun for me, because some of the most fun times I had were sitting in a classroom trying to crack Shane up while he's delivering information, and Shane doing the same thing while I'm delivering information. Oh, those were the years with Earl Carnes, and gosh, we had a fun time. Shane's going to talk to us today, mostly because people have asked me to get Shane back on. And so that's all I need is a little emphasis to pick somebody. So I called Shane, and this was about the hardest podcast to put to. I finally had to say, look, if you don't want to be on it, just tell me. And he's like, oh, no. Shane is a remarkably interesting cat. There's no question about that. And he's busy as can be, and he's traveling, and he's thinking, and he's doing this work. And Shane really is at the sharper end of the stick. He's out there in the world looking at it. And Shane's specialty really is going in and talking about this philosophy, the philosophy of the new view, higher reliability, and getting workers and managers to really listen carefully and absorb a lot of information. Plus, he's a super fun guy. So I don't know how much more I can talk about how much I love Shane. It's pretty, you know, we're deep into benevolent butt kissing right now. But I do want you to listen to this podcast because Shane's got a story to tell, which I didn't think would happen. I mean, no. So when we do these podcasts, and soon you'll be on one, so be ready. First of all, don't be nervous. Everyone gets all nervous. Don't be nervous. Secondly, it's just a conversation. That's all. That's all it is. We don't rehearse anything. We don't talk about it very. I mean, it's not like, okay, you say this, and then I'll say this, and then we both laugh. No, we're talking. And I finally got Shane to cleave a little time out of his day, and we just talked to each other. And where this conversation went, I would not have guessed it would have gone there. But he's going to tell a story. It's a pretty good story of really the new view in practice in the field, on the production floor. I think you're going to like it a lot. Other than that, man, just keep doing what you're doing, and do me a favor. Let's make 2017 just about as much fun as we can possibly make it. That seems like a pretty good place to start this discussion. So without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, this is Shane Bush on the Pre-Accident Podcast. How have you been, young lassie?
I've been good.
Have you been good? Yeah. It is so much fun to have you back on the podcast. Everyone wants you. You're the elusive Shane Bush.
Well, I appreciate that. I apologize. I've been so hard to catch. We're actually sitting in the airport right now, but hey, that's where I live. So
that's
where Lassie Telford lives.
That's the place where you hang out, eh?
That's right.
That's funny. I tell everyone I'm easy to contact but hard to communicate with. No. I think I say the opposite. I think I'm easy to communicate with but hard to contact. That's what I tell everybody.
Right. Exactly, right.
That's a part of it. So what's going on in your world? What do you think, if you had to pick one thing to talk about as the most interesting thing that's happening with this kind of new view on safety, with human performance is what you do, really. What's been the most interesting part of this year?
Well, you know, I have to admit that it was just a month ago. I have struggled, and I think a lot of people have, with the performance modes and differentiating between the performance modes. And I had one manager, and I did not get his permission to tell his story yet, so I'll just kind of set it up without telling you the company name. But anyway, I had a large company that was implementing human performance in numerous locations. One of them happened to be up in Canada, and He had sat through the class a couple of years ago, really thought this human performance thing could really help him understand some statistics and metrics that he had been measuring for a long time, but it really wasn't, he couldn't really find out exactly what was telling him. And basically what was going on is there was a couple of months in which really spiked for him, not necessarily incidents related to just safety, but operational upsets. And it was like 2 or 3 years in a row. It happened to be months that were associated with people being gone. So he did associate it initially with overtime and people filling in different positions. But then we got to talking about performance modes, and for the first time, he said, I was really able to dig in and find out specifically what was going on related to people being on overtime or filling in. And what he found was that the people that, during November, for example, was a big month for hunting for them, and so they had a lot of overtime, which still didn't explain it, because the people that were replacing them weren't working necessarily extra time, but they were reassigned to jobs and tasks that they don't do real often. So obviously, they would, if they were in skill-based, barely in skill-based, maybe a little bit lower rule-based. But this whole thing was based on the premise, by the way, of a quote that I love, and that is that people need reminded a lot more than they need trained. In other words, training, of course, is one of the big three corrective actions we love to go to. But what I'm finding more and more is people get qualified on a particular task or qualified to do something. They don't do it for a number of months. So they make errors and mistakes related to that. And, of course, the answer is, well, we need to retrain them on that. Only to find out if they'd had just a little reminder prior to the task or to the job, they probably would have reduced their errors significantly. So this manager listened to this whole discussion.
Where'd that quote come from? Who said that?
I can't remember. Oh. And that's, honestly, it's one that I'd heard in a session, and 90% of my quotes are just repeats. So even though I have some originals, I don't take credit for any of them, because I honestly don't know. I've been doing this so long, I don't know if they're my quotes or someone else's quotes. But
I understand completely.
I try not to take credit for any of that, because I just honestly don't know. And sometimes, as you're aware, you can hear different people's views on things and even some specific quotes. And then you find that for your specific case, you massage a little bit and it actually works great. So then you have to decide, is it still your quote or their quote? But anyway, I've been studying this specifically about people needing reminded more than they need trained quite a bit in the last couple of years, ever since I heard this. So the manager pulled me aside and he talked for a few minutes in the initial training. We didn't really discuss a lot, and he went off and he implemented it to the best that he could. And I'll tell you what he did here in a minute, but I ended up at his plant specific. He was actually a plant manager brought down to the United States at a corporate meeting where he heard me, and went up and implemented this human performance stuff. But I eventually ended up at his plant about a month ago, teaching a practitioner class. And when he showed me what he had done, I thought, you know, this to me is exactly what human performance has the potential of doing once someone truly understands how multifaceted the process is in helping you understand people's behaviors. But this is what he did. He actually looked into it, interviewed people, and come to find out their errors and mistakes really were errors and mistakes of basically doing the job infrequently, being called in on overtime, on operating a piece of machinery they hadn't maybe operated for a few months. They were qualified. I mean, they had the qual card, and the training showed them being qualified. So what he did is he started barcoding the pieces of machinery and or the processes and put them in a book that as many as he could. And this is basically the major parts of the process, but you got to understand this plant is huge. So we're literally talking about hundreds of tasks or processes. But if an employee is called to do an overtime, they track their quals not only on are they qualled, but when was the last time they performed a particular task,
wow,
operated a particular piece of machinery.
Wow, that's amazing.
And if it's been, when he showed me, they all have a little tablet. And they can grab a tablet and they can pull up their name, and the manager can do this, the supervisor can do this, the employee can do this. And they got these tablets, and they've got all their quals and stuff. Now each tablet is not specific to an employee. You just put in their number and it pulls up their information.
Right. It's just, it's a tablet, right? It's just like an iPad,
yeah,
or whatever.
But he walked around and he showed me that by going to the barcode, either in a book or actually on the piece of equipment out in the field, in the plant, it would pull up an average of a 2-minute tutorial that they would listen to that would remind them of the key points or process points of the piece of machinery, or reminders of how to fill out lockout tagout if it's been a while, or reminders on how to do a three-way diagram switch if they hadn't done it in a while, whatever it was. Now, as you can imagine, the reason I he's had 2 years to work on this. So he's put a lot of time and effort into getting this to the point where they've actually seen a significant reduction in those months that were the high months, because they finally realized, and even though they knew kind of what was going on, they never could come up with a corrective action. Well, they kept sending people back to training. And of course, now you get training on something you're still not going to do for another 8 months because you never catch up.
Training kind of feels like punishment. It feels, you know, it's weaponized. Maybe weaponized training is what happens. It's kind of...
Well, that's the second half. That's the second half I was going to mention to you is, because training takes time, it seems like somewhat of a punishment to some people. Most people don't need trained on the whole process again. They just need to be reminded, as I've been saying. So people actually, for a while there, the reason they couldn't get a handle on this is because even if they did make errors and mistakes, if they could, they would try to fix it themselves or not mention it because they knew they'd end up in training, right? So by doing this and giving them these little tutorials, even if they do mess up, they interview them, they get the context, which we know is king, and then they may ask them, just do these two or three tutorials and catch up, or make sure the next time you do it, do these tutorials. So it was just, I don't know, to watch a company really get it, at least one part of the process, and they've integrated it into their work control process. They've done all the things that high reliability organizations tend to do. They immediately see that this is a business initiative, not a safety or quality or any of those specific. It's all of it, right? So anyway, I when I was sitting there listening to him, I thought, what a something that needs to be shared with companies and possibly even benchmarked is this whole approach of just-in-time training, or like I said, being not and I'm actually trying to reword that, just-in-time reminders, because again, I think we need to be careful about the word training because it's got a specific connotation to it of sitting down, signing a roster, being introduced to any or all of the process. So if we call it just-in-time reminders, now a lot of people have already done this. They just call them operator aids. But in his case, formalizing it to the point where he could, he even showed me, he says, let me pull up an employee random. So he pulled up an employee random, said this employee's name is such and such. Here's all the pieces of machinery he's qualified to do. And by the way, let me pick one. So he picks a piece of machinery. And the first one he picked, he'd recently done it, and so that wasn't a good example. So he closed it and pulled up another one. Well, he had one in there that even though he's qualified because it's a yearly qual, he hadn't operated it for months. And so then you go to the tutorial, and it'll basically give you an overview. Now, that all sounds great, but as you can imagine, the hardest thing with that is keeping the tutorials up to date, because if anything changes on the machinery, you have a change in the way it operates, or you have to calibrate it differently this time, then that tutorial is key in keeping up to date. So what they've done is they've assigned basically about 10 or 12 tutorials, I'm not sure, that people have to keep up to date and make sure the information's correct. Some of them don't change at all because it's just so basic and the machinery never changes.
The trash compactor is always the trash compactor. So
but exactly.
That's no different really than keeping procedures refreshed and renewed, right? I mean,
right.
It's the same idea.
Right.
But it sounds to me like
a heck of a lot.
It sounds to me like these guys are, well, it's way cooler for sure. It sounds to me like these guys, it's the workers who actually run the machine get to create the tutorial, the refresher.
Well, that's a question I asked. I asked who did the tutorials, and it was a combination. Sometimes it was the subject matter expert on it. Sometimes it was just a fellow employee. In fact, quite often they would ask the employees to do it. Some were willing, some weren't. But the employee, even though they weren't necessarily skilled at presentation skills, it didn't matter. They weren't looking at this for necessarily quality and presentation of the process. They were looking at it on what does it look like from a worker's perspective on what they need to know and what they need to remember. So it varied on who did the tutorials.
But it seems like you could make those kind of, I mean, you could get kind of creative with that. They could almost be kind of, I don't know if I want to say the word funny, but if you made them kind of pleasant and fun to watch and fun to make.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they'd be easy to keep up. I mean, it seems like
I'm not sure if you fly Delta much. I know you fly a lot of
so are
different
you,
airlines.
I
but
hope,
Delta.
What I hope you're going to say is I hope you're going to talk about the funny. Are you going to talk about the funny
safety? Yeah.
I love those on Delta.
I'm telling you. I know. They have taken on a Southwest approach to their, and I would call them tutorials, because when I watch them, it's not training. It's a reminder to me. I mean, I've watched those stupid things how many times, but yet I have to admit that they're changing them about every 2 to 3 months for less frequent flyers, and they're changing it up enough. I think the current one has people from 20 different countries that come in and give different pieces of the introduction, but I thought that's a great example of how you keep it fresh. You keep it to where people have heard it 100 times, they're willing to listen to it, if nothing else, just to see what's new. But
oh, absolutely. And they're great.
Well,
fun.
And the other
thing, and they're hilarious.
But,
I mean, they're the last.
By the way, yeah,
and
the other thing,
you can Google these,
and
people Google, people sit at home and Google Delta's safety briefing videos. Holy crap. If you can get people to watch your safety briefing videos and they're not on your plane,
you're pretty
successful. Oh, holy cow.
Yeah, I've always said that there's two things that you know you've made it. You know you've made it as a company. One of them is when people tattoo the name of your company on their chest or arm or whatever.
Yes, is that why you
like
have
Harley Davidson?
Is that why you have Idaho National Laboratory on your arm?
Well, it's on my hip, but anyway.
Oh yeah, yes, left buttock. Left buttock.
No, but anyway, or if they actually seek you out for a learning experience, not because they're doing work with you, but because they're looking at you as a benchmark, right? I wanted to mention real quick the other thing that has happened that has been so interesting is that in speaking of progression, we have at Oak Ridge National Lab, and I'm sure you've heard of this, they're doing a 3D printing down there with nanoparticles and different things, and I may be using some of these terms incorrectly. But anyway, I sat in on a presentation not too long ago where they were showing how they can 3D cars, 3D all sorts of stuff. And they now have plants, and there's a company that has 12 plants now that is actually has the capability of you walking in on Monday, designing your car, and even though the framework, the chassis and all that may be the same, the body style and everything is your style, and they can print it out and have it ready by the next Friday. I'm talking within a week.
Wow.
Now, think about that in relationship to human performance. And I've been asked to give a presentation for, as you know, Seminar Fest on safety related to, what's the term we were using the other day?
Disruptive safety.
Disruptive safety.
So our buddies in Australia are going to know all about this, but the rest of the people listening to the podcast may not know about disruptive safety or the term disruptive
safety. And I'm glad. In fact, I want to throw that out, that I have significantly learned a lot from what they're doing in Australia related to that. They're leading it as far as disruptive safety, in my opinion, as far as the term and explaining it. So they're asking me to do something similar. So I'm really researching based on your recommendations a lot of what they've been doing there. But as you can imagine, it's the whole world is about to change, because in the past, if you wanted to own a car dealership, you'd have to have a minimum of $1 billion, because you'd have to buy machines that can make models, make presses, make your first car, your demo car, and et cetera. And usually you have 200 to 300 cars on your lot if you're a large automotive industry. So think of all that inventory you have sitting there, and those are the choices they have to take. Well, these 12 plants that's teamed with Oak Ridge on this 3D printing, they actually don't have any inventory other than you come in and look at what they've built or computers. And I think about that in relationship to companies. We are about to go through a huge change in how we manage processes and people in relationship to production. And if we're not familiar with human performance or human fallibility, or just the fact that the way humans run and operate, we're going to be presented with a whole new set of issues that we have to overcome. And if you're not prepared for that, then you're going to be left behind for a while. And I honestly, what I'm projecting, December 4th, 2016, Shane Bush is projecting.
Okay, here it comes.
You're going to see major changes in people leading the pack in major manufacturing. So some of the big names are slowly going to be replaced by all these smaller people, because now they estimate $12 million, you can own your own car dealership, make your own cars, and actually sell them that meet all the codes for creating a vehicle. I have no doubt, Todd, that's going to roll over into numerous industries. No doubt in my mind.
Well, let me give you an example. So I got a new dentist because I had to get a new dentist because my old dentist was far away, and we had sort of we'd grown apart.
We'd grown apart.
That's a good way to say that. So I got this new dentist, and I had a crown that I've had since I was a kid on a back tooth, and about every 3 years it would fall off because I have amazingly powerful spit. At least that's what my old dentist would tell me. This is kind of part of why we drifted apart. So I go to this new dentist, and the crown falls off, actually, while I was in the dentist office. And he said, oh, let's fix this. This is not a problem. And I said, yeah. I said, you know, use whatever glue you need to. It falls off every year or so. And he looked at me and he said, every year or so? And I said, yeah. He said, that's not how this works. He said, let me fix it. He said, you know, we're probably going to have to produce a new crown. Hold on. He gets this little machine, comes in, sticks it in my mouth. It buzzes and takes some pictures. And then he 3D prints a crown while I'm in the dental chair. You know, something that if you've ever had a crown, you know, they measure everything. They make a little wax mold.
Oh, yeah.
They send it to somebody who creates it. It's artisanal. And then you have to come back to the dentist, which means you get to pay for another visit. And they put the crown on. This guy just 3D printed. So I went over and watched him 3D print it. And he said most of the dental implants he does, most of the crowns he does, he can produce in any color. He said, I'm going to match your color. But he said, you could have any color you want. They can actually produce the tooth. And what's interesting to me is that absolutely influences how the customer experiences the work and how the worker experiences the work. And it's that socio-technical interface, that place where the human performance happens, is so different now. And we really have to keep up on things like, you know, the question I would ask, Shane, and I think it's the story you just told, is does our traditional training concepts, you know, the ones that have served us well for the last 30, 40, 50 years, are they still the right way to conceive of training? And is it training now, or is it refreshing, or is it reminding, or is it familiarization? Do we do just-in-time familiarization?
Yes, and that's the point I'm trying to make, is I see, and I don't even know what to call it, like you. It's so new that I don't even know what we're going to call this thing. But I honestly believe the traditional sitting in a classroom, learning something but not using it for 6 months, that's if you stick to that model, I have no doubt companies are going to come in and replace you, because with the technology they have today, just exactly what you experienced, we've got the capability of the technology is so immense that we cannot train you on everything. Some things is going to be just in time initial refresher or training, whatever the case may be.
Sure.
Here's the other thing, though,
for contractors, short service employees, for people
absolutely.
Who float around. I mean, that's always been a challenge.
It has been. And so if you can come up with a methodology that allows you to give them the basics, but then the tutorials or whatever process, it doesn't have to be tutorials. But the technology combined with that, the social technology or technical approach that you're talking about, here's what they say. And I read this just the other day. Even though the 3D is changing a lot of thoughts and concepts about how to produce stuff, it's still extremely expensive. In other words, talking about the automobile industry, for the automobile industry, from going from actual, here's our thoughts and design on what we want to produce, to actually producing a car is a minimum of 12 to 15 months. By the time you build all the, what do you call the pieces of machinery, the moldings, the molds and all that, which is very expensive. But the bad news is, because it is 3D, it's very expensive to print these big objects, whether metal, whether plastic, it doesn't matter. So the errors and mistakes have got to be reduced to almost zero as far as the consequences. So now the latest human performance technologist, I believe for the next generation, had better be someone that is smart, not only in the basics that we've been involved with, but how do we look at this and actually help them when they design the software to insert in that different steps or processes that catch mistakes, because their mistakes have significant costs. Whereas if I'm producing an automobile and I put out one wrong part, then it's no big deal. But I don't know. I'm pretty excited. I think that there's such a whole new view. That's pretty noisy, isn't it?
No, it sounds good. You sound like you're in the Delta Lounge in Salt Lake City, I'm guessing. I'm just going from – I thought I heard the sound of a banana peel hit a trash can next to a soup bowl. That's what I thought I heard. Am I right?
Yeah. You're right on. But anyway, as we've always said, this concept of this philosophy of human performance, it's going to continue to mold and to change with technology, or at least it better. If it doesn't continue to stay up to date, the same with how technology is changing, then we're going to see ourselves behind the curve. And of course, you don't want to be caught in that situation.
Well, so let me ask.
There's just a lot of really neat things going on.
Let me ask the question then, because it begs a question. What are you doing differently? How's this changed what you're doing?
Okay, what I'm doing differently is I'm learning from the example I gave you, that company with the just-in-time, taking the tutorials. And I'm turning my process. In fact, that same company, I've actually got an agreement with them. But all of the software that they're using to produce this, I'm going to have full rights to it, because I've been consulting with them to develop this, even though I didn't see the specific application. So now my plan is that if you were to sit in my class a year from now or 2 years from now, well, we will always talk the basics. People are fallible. We make errors. The basics have got to be there. I think the old model of going in there and grabbing a tool and going through the toolbox and make sure they do a self-check or make sure they do a peer check, while there certainly will be applications of that, I think that the new model is how that is integrated into the process to where the user has no idea that stuff has been integrated into the process. All he or she knows is they're getting a prompt to do something. They're getting a prompt to measure something. They're getting a prompt to do something and not even knowing why.
And that's this disruptive sort of approach to safety. That's actually looking at the work we do and really using it at a different place in the work. So where once we came in afterwards, after designers and, you know, as Frederick Taylor would say, after the smart people designed the work and then gave it to the workers, we would go in and look at it. But now we're looking at seeing the work, or what I'm hearing you say is we're looking at seeing the work really at every phase, from the design phase all the way through the implementation and execution phase. That's pretty cool.
It is, and as you can imagine, it's going to shift the types of jobs we do. Just like technology and computers and all that have shifted us from doing all the heavy lifting as human beings, well, these things are being produced by machines, and now we're running computer databases rather than, well, you would think that, okay, we've arrived, but not even close. I mean, we've got a whole new level to go to. And I have no doubt 20 years from now, they'll be looking back at even what's coming up thinking, man, that was old school. So this eternal progression, it's always exciting to wonder, man, 10 years from now. In fact, let me give you from this perspective. I had to do a keynote on technology, and I think I mentioned this in the last podcast. But if I did, I apologize, but I think it's worth reiterating because it's real short. But I had to do study as far as technology and safety and do a keynote. Well, what I found was they were predicting that in 2001, 2002, turn of the century, if you turned 50 years old around the turn of the century, then you could typically cruise through retirement with whatever technology you knew, PowerPoint, Excel, maybe the software they have at the company for you to produce what you're doing. Well, starting in about 2010, 2011, they are now showing that if you turn 50 those years or later, you have to learn two or three new technologies before you can retire, of which one or two of them haven't even been created yet. So this whole thing about continuous improvement is going to actually excel to the point where it's going to be exponential. I would imagine 10 years from now, you're going to have to learn four new technologies before you can retire.
So kind of Moore's Law for human performance. That's pretty cool.
I think there's some really neat things coming. Yeah.
Wow, Shane. Thanks, man. That was a really interesting. I did not think we would go this direction. You took us in a direction I did not think we'd go, which means you're perfect for the podcast.
Well, I don't know about that, but it's sad because I see so many companies excelling at it while other companies are stuck in ruts, not knowing what to do with it. And it's hard because sometimes you're trying to share with all the companies what you're learning, and some of them just are not ready for it. They're either not ready for it because of technology, or they're just not ready for it because of the political environment they work within. Who knows? But I really see a separation coming with companies that take off and excel. And most of them, I'm telling you, I'm predicting this as well, you're going to see so many startup companies over the next 10 to 12 years that have no baggage. In other words, you're going to have a bunch of 20 and 30-year-olds that don't have all this 40, 50 years of baggage of how we run and operate. And they're not going to see the barriers that typically you and I would see, or the older generation would see, because they don't know about them. They don't even know they exist.
Wow. What'd you think? I told you. It's pretty interesting, that podcast. I enjoyed it immensely. A little long, not too long. I mean, I went a little over my allotted projected goal for timing, but I don't know. I could have probably cut the stripper name stuff out, but why? That's the best part of the conversation, if you ask me. So that's Shane. And what Shane's looking at is really a big change in the way we do pre-jobs, the way we do work assignments, the way we look at processes and procedures is changing. This idea that we're moving from training to reminding, boy, that's some interesting stuff. I don't know. Kick it around and think about how this applies to what you do. I certainly am doing the thing, that same thing on my side of the equation. Interesting podcast. Thank you, Shane. Thanks for spending time with us. We'll do more of it as well. That's probably enough for today, don't you think? Why don't you go back to work and see what's happening? Have as much fun as you possibly can. I mean, that's really important. Learn something new every single day, and for goodness sakes, be safe.
Lassie Telford.